Welcome to Local Talk on KHOY Community Radio, where we explore people, stories, and events in Central Iowa. It's good to get together again to provide facts to our community through Zoom technology and the spoken word. Thank you for listening. I am Pat Schlarbaum, your host for the hour. We've got a full program in store today. But first, the weather will be hot again today with a high of 92 and a thunderstorm possible. We need this rain to happen. Nothing but more sunshine with highs in the 80s and 90s over the weekend and into next week. Let's welcome Dennis Hart, who works so wonderfully at gathering the news for this week from the pages of the Ames Tribune.
The coronavirus continued making news in the Ames Tribune last week, but it was not the only story to make headlines. Last Friday, the Trib reported that Iowa Governor Kim Reynolds said she was pleased with the state's current rate of coronavirus vaccinations and that she would not move to create a lottery system to encourage residents to get vaccinated. This after Ohio Governor Mike DeWine reported a big increase in vaccination rates after he announced five $1 million lottery drawings for those who get vaccinated for the coronavirus, plus five college scholarships for teens who get vaccinated. Other states, including West Virginia, Minnesota, Illinois, and California, have followed suit. Here in Iowa, Polk and Blackhawk counties are exploring their own incentive programs for vaccinations. The Trib also reported that free speech training requirements are under development for state university campuses in Iowa. The State Board of Regents has approved a set of policies in reaction to incidents at Iowa State University, the University of Iowa, and the University of Northern Iowa. Those policies say that each university will be required to provide training on free speech to all students, faculty, and staff each year. The state has a new law that such free speech training is required at the public universities, and there will be penalties for faculty members who infringe on a student's right to free expression. And there was word that Nevada's Community Garden would start its first season with a ribbon-cutting event last Saturday. The garden is led by a small group of Nevada residents who call themselves Garden Gurus. The garden encompasses a quarter acre dedicated to growing produce to donate to the three Nevada food pantries, Nevada Food at First, Cubby's Cupboard, and the Nevada Community Cupboard. The plot will include a strawberry patch, a lettuce garden, a vegetable garden, an herb garden, salsa garden with tomatoes and peppers, and a baked potato and onion patch. Saturday's Trib reported that the City of Ames is still taking applications for coronavirus-related rent, mortgage, and utility assistance. The city received more than $350,000 from the third round of CARES Act funding. To be eligible for assistance, you must be an Ames resident who is able to document a loss of income directly related to the coronavirus. At least one adult or emancipated minor in the home must be a U.S. citizen or have eligible immigration status as a permanent resident under Section 249 of the Immigration and Nationality Act. The Trib also reported that Habitat for Humanity of Central Iowa is accepting applications from families to fill two new affordable homes the organization expects to start building in Ames this summer. The application deadline is 1 week from today. The new homes will be at 1126 Grand Avenue and at 618 10th Street. The original homes on those lots were torn down to make way for the new ones. Habitat is looking for families to fill the three-bedroom, 1,000-square-foot homes they have planned. On top of their mortgage, the families that are selected will have to complete 400 hours of so-called sweat equity, such as helping with a home build or volunteering in Habitat's Central Iowa office. Those hours can be finished by friends and family members as well. And the Trib also reported that more than 60 artists had taken part during last Thursday's annual art walk in downtown Ames. Sunday's Trib reported that the Story County Animal Shelter had opened its doors to the public for the first time since March of last year, and that the Ames Animal Shelter expects approval from the city to do the same thing soon. The shelters are nearing normalcy after more than a year of being flexible to recommendations from the Federal Centers for Disease Control, and the shelters are looking to bring in volunteers for the first time since the coronavirus forced the facilities to shut down. During the shutdown, both shelters ended up seeing fewer animals come into their places, and they also saw adoptions increasing. That was happening at shelters all across the nation. Applicants for animals in the local animal shelters were brought in by appointment only. That may continue. The Trib also reported that a new artificial intelligence graduate degree program at Iowa State University will be the first of its kind in the state. The Iowa Board of Regents has approved the two-year Master's of Science degree program. It's expected to start in the fall. It will seek to produce graduates who can work on building and enhancing components of artificial intelligence and be able to communicate the capabilities and limitations of AI. Thousands of new jobs are expected in the artificial intelligence field in the next few years. The technology could be used, among other things, to decrease error rates in diagnoses in healthcare, create vaccines faster, and improve the sustainable use of resources. And the Trib had word that Polk County could have a response to one of the biggest criticisms that farmers face with Iowa's voluntary approach to improving water quality, that farmers are too slow to adopt conservation practices that can curb runoff into the state's rivers, streams, and lakes. The county is leading a social, state, and federal partnership to quickly build saturated buffers and bioreactors. Those structures are among the most effective ways that farmers can curb the runoff of nitrogen, and to a lesser extent, phosphorus, into Iowa's waters. High nitrate levels require the Des Moines Water Works and other utilities to spend millions of dollars on extra treatment to make water safe to drink. Tuesday's Trib had the welcome news that the number of students in area school districts who have tested positive for the coronavirus in recent weeks has gone way down. The Ames School District reported no positive cases in the preschool or elementary schools, the middle school, or the high school. And the most recent indications from the Ballard, Nevada, and Roland Story School Districts were that no students had recently tested positive there. The Gilbert School District reported that one student had tested positive. There was also word that a correctional officer from the Anamosa State Penitentiary is making a 339-mile run across the state in honor of the two employees who were killed during an escape attempt at the prison in March. 36-year-old Ryan Miller of Manchester started the journey last Friday in Sioux City. He expected it to take 9 days. He said by raising awareness about what happened at the prison, he hoped that people will think more about the State Department of Corrections staff and donate to a fundraiser. There was also word that an author in Colo had published a book about foster care and adoption. Kim Combs' book is titled Walk in a Manner Worthy, A Voice in the Foster and Adoptive Care Wilderness. Combs started fostering kids more than 30 years ago. He and his wife have fostered about 36 young people. And the Trib reported that a father and son have opened a food truck on the west side of the Lowe's parking lot on Airport Road in Ames. Willie and Anthony Fonseca's truck houses the Cuban Street Cafe. They offer breakfast, lunch, and dinner Mondays through Fridays. Willie Fonseca was born in Cuba, and his family moved to the United States when he was 3 years old, moving first to Mexico and eventually settling in Florida. His son Anthony was born in Florida. Wednesday's Trib reported that community members spoke out at Monday night's Ames School Board meeting, making clear their desire that the district remain committed to the diversity, equity, and inclusion work that Superintendent Jenny Reisner had championed. Reisner has submitted her resignation, effective at the end of the month. On Monday night, speakers told the school board they wanted assurances that when Reisner leaves, it will not end the district's work to hire and retain diverse staff, have a curriculum that's relevant to all students' cultures, and address disparities in educational achievement, how students are disciplined, and how school resource officers are used. Ames NAACP President Edna Clinton said, in her words, "Going backwards is not an option." The Trib also reported that about 50 people attended a public forum on Monday featuring Jeff Huff, one of the two finalists hoping to be the next police chief of Ames. Residents asked Huff about use of force policies, data transparency, and racial equity. The other finalist for the job, John Justiniano of California, will speak to the public at the Ames Library this coming Monday afternoon at 4:30. Thursday's Trib, yesterday's, reported that 10 new coronavirus cases had been confirmed in Story County. That brought the total number of cases in the county to 10,705. The county's 14-day positivity rate was 1.6%. The Trib also reported that the Ames City Council had returned to council chambers Tuesday night for the first time in more than a year, after the coronavirus pandemic had forced the council to conduct virtual meetings. And Tuesday's meeting brought plenty of public comment about a development that's being planned at Ada Hayden Park's watershed. The Friends of Ada Hayden Park had requested the property, known as Rose Prairie, be dedicated as wetlands and park space last November, but the council voted against that plan. The development will bring with it 315 to 428 dwelling units. On Tuesday night, Ada Hayden advocates pushed for more water runoff protections. There was also word that the City of Ames is planning to launch a program called the Ames Appreciation Project. It will offer creative outlets, neighborhood recognition, and even participation in the city's 4th of July parade. And there was word that the estate of a woman who had been raised in Story City and who then went out into the world to have success in various endeavors, had donated nearly $4.5 million to the city, its museum, and the library. Fran Kinney died last year, just a few weeks shy of her 103rd birthday. She had broken many glass ceilings during her life, including being the first woman to earn a doctorate from the University of Frankfurt, becoming the first female dean of a fine arts college in the United States, and becoming the first female president of a Florida university. Earlier, Kinney's estate had donated $800,000 to Story City, the museum, the library, and the school district. And that is your summary of the week's news from the Ames Tribune. I'm Dennis Hart, taking my leave now and ready to enjoy this springtime weekend in Ames, but promising to come right back here on Local Talk on Monday morning at 7, when I'll report on what's been making news around the state. I hope you'll be here as well. Meanwhile, don't even think about touching that dial, because there's a whole lot more to come straight ahead on Local Talk. Have a great weekend.
Dennis Hart with your Week in the News, and the music interlude was Rain by the Beatles in that Revolver era of mid-1960s for you younger listeners. It's a good one. And something we need more of, hopefully tonight, is some rain. And there's a bit of rain vibes in our next story. Here's Carolyn Raffensperger with another periodic update on pipelines. Here's Carolyn.
And there's current news, Carolyn. Let's talk about the Keystone XL pipeline and the passing of a spiritual elder of the Rosebud Nation, Leonard Crowdog.
Oh, it's a big day. It's a big day. Yesterday, the company, TC Energy, which used to be TransCanada, announced that it, with its partner, the government of Alberta, is terminating the Keystone XL pipeline. Now, a lot of you may have heard of the Dakota Access Pipeline, but there are actually three big pipelines that have been in the works for a decade or so. Keystone XL was the first to launch a serious water protector movement in the Midwest. And that pipeline came down through South Dakota and Nebraska. And many of the activists put together unique and remarkable coalitions to stop what especially the indigenous people called the Black Snake. And that pipeline was destined to carry tar sands, one of the most horrible, horrible substances known to humanity, just a filthy oil, and carry it across so many bodies of water and across so much land. And we've been working to stop it for a long, long time. And then that whole struggle gave rise to organizing around the Dakota Access Pipeline, which is in the ground and yet is still being challenged in the courts. Tribes have been winning, and yet administrations from Trump to Biden have not yet actually followed through on the court's decision that the environmental impact statement is illegal. And then there's a third pipeline, Enbridge Line 3, which is also supposed to carry tar sands from Canada across the water and the wild rice of Minnesota. And there's been a large resistance against that as well. Monday of this week, thousands showed up for a direct action against Enbridge. So these three pipelines, Keystone XL, Dakota Access, and Enbridge Line 3, have been central to the work on climate and on water and indigenous rights for 10 years. And yesterday, one of those big ones got shut down.
Yeah, the Keystone XL has been terminated. The Bakken, or the Dakota Access Pipeline, that's the one that goes diagonally across Iowa. That one is in operation, hoping to double the capacity of oil that goes through it. And then the Enbridge is...
60% of Enbridge's Line 3 is complete.
Okay.
And the major resistance is at the headwaters of the Mississippi, where there's now a camp. The three pipelines are in various stages of construction and completion. And the Dakota Access is running, and they are doubling the oil. And for those of you in Story County, they are currently working on the pump station in Story County, the only one in Iowa, which is helps force the oil through the pipeline into Illinois across the Mississippi. So these pipelines have either do threaten or were going to threaten the key rivers that bound Iowa, the Missouri and the Mississippi. And thankfully, Keystone has been terminated. So Enbridge may go into operation, but I am counting on the same kind of resistance that led to the shutdown of Keystone and that was mobilized so astonishingly well at Standing Rock in North Dakota.
There is an environmental impact statement that has been in arrears or hasn't been completed. Do you know the status of the environmental impact statement for the Dakota Access Pipeline?
I do. So a judge in federal court in Washington, D.C., ruled that environmental impact statement was not lawfully done. It was inadequate for many reasons. And it was appealed by Dakota Access and went to a higher court. The court agreed with the lower court that it was in violation, that the Army Corps of Engineers was in violation of the law, and sent it back to the judge to decide whether to shut it down. The judge gave the brand new administration in Biden a chance to make a decision about whether to shut it down or what to do while it was redoing the environmental impact statement. And Biden's administration asked for an extension, didn't make a decision, kept on waffling. And the judge has written a couple of weeks ago a really harsh statement about the Army Corps. The indecision is really resulting in an injustice, but that the tribes had not made a showing that the pipeline going across the Missouri River would cause irreparable harm, that there was a risk of irreparable harm. As he assessed the probability of a leak being pretty low. But his frustration was directed at the Army Corps of Engineers. What I want to say about all of these pipelines is going back to that startling press release that came out of TC Energy about the Keystone Pipeline, that its partner, government of Alberta, was its partner. And what is striking to me is that Alberta, the government which should be buying for the people, was buying for a corporation. And it's dependent on oil revenue, much like North Dakota, Los Angeles, Texas, in this country. And those governments dependent on the revenue means that they are destroying the foundation of life of its constituents and its of all of nature. Mm-hmm. And until we rethink what government should be for, if it's only for the economy, we are going to destroy ourselves. And Alberta being a partner with a fossil fuel company is chilling to me. Mm-hmm. And what we have going for us is the kind of spiritual resistance, the kind of ecological knowledge that many people bring, particularly Indigenous people, and the interventions, the prayers that have been brought to bear to stand up to governments which have the power of force, the acts of violence by the U.S. government against water protectors is legendary, even against protesters and water protectors at Enbridge Line 3. Border Patrol used a helicopter to stir up the dust and grit, a huge cloud of dust, to threaten the water protectors. When government is on the side of corporations and against the side of living things, we are in deep trouble. And now we've got those prayers. We've got that resistance, which won in the case of Keystone, and we have a long way to go. But you've been part of some of those prayers, some of that resistance as well. I know that you were part of the veterans contingent that went to Standing Rock when a dear friend of yours accepted the apology of the U.S. veterans who had represented the U.S. government against Indigenous rights. So this conversation is long and deep. And Leonard Crowdog was the person who accepted the apology from the veterans who represented the U.S. military that had been used against the people. I wonder if you wanted to say any more about him and about that kind of dialogue about government and how it uses and the forces that Indigenous people have lined up in order to protect water. In order to protect the land.
Yeah, it was General Wesley Clark's son, and I think he was a lieutenant colonel. Can't recall his rank, but yes, he met with Leonard Crowdog, spiritual leader of the Rosebud Nation, and made an apology for what had transpired at Wounded Knee back in the 1890s. It was a profound experience. There's a picture of all the veterans kneeling. And Mr. Crowdog, in his eminence, you know, accepted it, didn't make a big thing about it. But it was a noteworthy expression of grace on his part and to move forward. And yes, Leonard Crowdog has just recently passed a few days ago. And in honoring his work with all people, you know, his Sundance that he's held since 1972, when before it was even legal, wasn't made legal until 1977. Paradise, what they call Crow Dog's Paradise. But it has welcomed individuals of all nations, from all the colors of humanity. White, black, red, and yellow people have been gathering at Leonard Crowdog's. And that'll be late July, first part of August, again this year. It'll be interesting. This will be the first time in Leonard's passing. He has been confined to a little electronic wheelchair, but he was always there and always out. And I felt fortunate to be able to go out and visit last July. But Leonard Crowdog has passed, and what an incredible spiritual leader just came to the forefront of all the spiritual leaders in the, and this is the nation of the Sioux, but he's an incredible spiritual leader, and his work will be passed forward now, and his spirit will live on, because what an incredible guy, and it's hard to say too many good things about Leonard Crowdog. He was a man among men and just a wonderful individual on the planet.
I want to also acknowledge, you know, we're talking about death, and that the other end of the cycle is the beginning of that cycle is birth. And today is your 70th birthday, and what you have seen over your lifetime in terms of the cycles of nature, of that this is the time of year when babies are born. This is offspring. June is the time when we see new life, and you know. So thinking about your birthday, birthdays representing, you know, this beginning of the cycle, yeah. And that we have dedicated our lives to protecting the new life, that renewing of life through the cycles of life, through the cycles of seasons all the way around. But I want to honor you for what you have done with people like Leonard Crowdog, with DNR, the Department of Natural Resources here in Iowa, that your life is an exemplar of the kind of work that is needed to safeguard this precious planet. But I know that you and I are two among thousands. So I had a small role in Keystone. I had a small role in Dakota Access. And when I was thinking about it today, I was thinking of a picture that I had standing next to a guy in a polar bear suit out at a big federal hearing in Grand Island, Nebraska, on my birthday in April, I think in 2016 or 2015. I'm not entirely sure. And there I was standing next to a guy in a polar bear suit, making my pledge to the polar bear that I was not willing for them to be a martyr for our fossil fuels, you know, for the government of Alberta or the government of North Dakota, not willing for them to be a martyr to that. And I pledged my work to those babies of the polar bear.
And we all appreciate, and the universe appreciates that acknowledgement and support, Carolyn Raffensperger. But since you brought it up, I will have to say that my mom was from Idaho, and she told stories of coming to Iowa and relishing in the flocks of goldfinches that welcomed her. And she was quite a walker, apparently. And so whenever there's goldfinches, I think of my mom. And whenever I smell new mowed hay, I think of my dad, because apparently that was a story. He got word on June 10th, 1951, that going to the hospital, he's got another boy, and to welcome with my older brother, Mike. And then he went back to mowing hay. So we put up hay a lot this time of the year in southern Iowa.
A follow-up on that with the goldfinches.
Sure.
I was standing in my garden day before yesterday, and I have a container of water for the wild ones there, and a goldfinch flew in, a male alone, and stood on that rim to drink from that pool of water. And I never had seen anything as beautiful in my life. That color was so startling. It was breathtaking. And you know, Pat, that I think every single bird I've ever seen is the most beautiful I've ever seen. But this time I know for sure that seeing that goldfish, a goldfinch, and thinking about how it changes color through the season, it was just, I was enchanted, absolutely enchanted.
That's a good one. Yeah, and Leonard Crowdog would want me to point out that there is a basic law of nature called the law of mutual attraction. And when a bird comes in close proximity, trusts you, and would go ahead and drink, that's a really good sign that he was accepting you, and and he was probably as mutually attracted to you as you were to the goldfinch.
Well, I wouldn't mind a dating service between me and some birds. You know, I would love to, you know, have them come for a drink of water in my presence. And there's so little that gives as much joy as that. And last night, I went out to my garden just to check on it for the last of the evening checks. And I felt this rain on my skin, and I couldn't quite, I didn't know what it was. And it was like glitter. It sunk on my skin. And I realized it was raining. And it just wasn't even enough to, you know, to see on the railing or anything at that moment. But when I went back into, you know, undercover, it started to rain quite a bit more. We got less than a tenth of an inch, but it registered in my rain gauge that I have. And I could hear the birds singing with joy. And later someone posted on Facebook that the rain was in honor of the Keystone XL being ended. And she said the water knew. The water knew, the rain knew. And I believe that too. I think that too. Yeah. I think that the rain answered the call and the prayer to give to the... I asked the sky, do you remember how to do this? Please remember. Please don't forget how to give us rain. And the birds say their joy.
Yeah, that's a good one. You were acknowledged as a water protector, and I wish we'd have got tenth of an inch last night, but that's okay. Rain is in the forecast, maybe Friday night. So we'll keep our fingers crossed. It is certainly a dry spell, but appreciate water and appreciate all that the water protectors have brought to the planet these days. This is Carolyn Raffensperger with her periodic report, the Science and Environmental Health Network. Thank you so much, Carolyn.
Thank you, Pat. Talk to you soon.
Well, thank you, Carolyn, for your update. And as Carolyn mentioned, a spiritual leader who was renowned for revitalizing Native American religion and advocating for Native rights, Chief Leonard Crowdog of the Sikongu Lakota Nation, passed away shortly after midnight June 6th on Crowdog's Paradise on the Rosebud Indian Reservation. Chief Crowdog, who was descended from a line of four Lakota medicine men, was educated by his parents and elders from the Rosebud tribe. He learned traditional Lakota practices, songs, and ceremonies that had been passed down for generations and kept the knowledge alive as a medicine man for the tribe. Chief Crowdog leaves behind his wife, Joanne Crowdog, and many children and grandchildren. He was 78.
Oh,
And we're back. You're listening to Local Talk on KHOY Community Radio. I'm your host, Pat Schlarba, engineer Mike Murphy. Let's welcome Mary Rankin, Sustainability Director for the City of Ames and Iowa State University. Hi, Mary.
Hey. It's a pleasure to see you.
Yeah, thank you. It's great to have you with us again for your monthly installment. And sustainability, what an appropriate topic, always. But particularly today, it just seems like it's a good one to get established in our lives as we focus on our lack of rain, and hopefully we're going to get some to sustain us even more in the days to come. But I see you've got a College Creek cleanup planned in the low water levels, and this is always intriguing to me. So tell us about the College Creek cleanup and where it's located.
Sure. Well, College Creek, for our Ames community, you're probably aware, or maybe you're not, but this creek runs through Iowa State University. It pops under Lincoln Way. It pops back up then in Campus Town, pops down again, and then pops up in our Arboretum. And so this really stretches throughout the Ames community. And, you know, it does so, I think, as nature often does, in a very unassuming way. And so it's really easy to forget about these different waterways. But as we know, water quality is so important in sustaining us. So the College Creek cleanup event is something that we have been doing actually since 2009. I had an AmeriCorps member work with me when I first started in my position at Iowa State. And as part of her AmeriCorps service, she had to plan a volunteer event, and she had been walking across campus, noticing College Creek, you know, for a number of years, just walking over it, and thought it would be a great opportunity to bring people together to clean College Creek. And it's been so popular that we have continued it now. This is our 12th year for the event.
Yeah. And College Creek, I think back in the late 20th century, it had a lot of stressful challenges, with inputs and focusing on, and it was kind of taken for granted. And so it's starting in 2009, there was a change of perspective and some stewardship necessary to revitalize the College Creek.
Yeah, absolutely. I think a lot of our commitment to sustainability and our embracing of sustainability comes with education and awareness, you know, of the different pieces of our community that are so important to sustain and that are right there with us on a day-to-day basis. It's easy to drive by, to walk over, different areas. And really having an event like this allowed us to highlight to our community this really important waterway that runs through and attempts to work with us on a day-to-day basis. And so, this intern just did a phenomenal job of putting this event together. And because it happens in June, after, you know, classes, certainly we have summer classes, but, you know, the big, you know, semester is done. The academic year is complete. We have a lot of different people in our community from a standpoint of that don't necessarily live here year round, right? So we have visiting scholars, we have visiting research folks, we have folks coming in to visit family, we have folks coming in for different events. And so it's a really unique event in that so many different people can come and experience sustainability in our community. And they really enjoy this event. This event is one that we have made very family friendly. You know, the creek is not a major waterway, and so you don't need to navigate it by canoe is my point. And so people can walk along the banks, and particularly this year with the water levels being low, while we are, you know, desperately in need of water, it's a great opportunity to find all of that trash that otherwise isn't as accessible when we do have a lot of water flow. So hopefully these times are bringing us positive components in that we can get that much more trash out of this waterway system so that when it does fill up with water, it's that much healthier and cleaner.
And I see it's going to be in the morning, Saturday, June 12th at 10 a.m. and run until 2 o'clock in the afternoon. So during those 4 hours, what can a person expect, and where are you gathering to start with?
Sure. All very good questions. So we are gathering in the Forker Building parking lot, which is on the Iowa State campus. If you get on the Iowa State website, you can look at maps and you can look at parking lots, and you want to look for parking lot 50A. And for those who are familiar with Iowa State's campus, the Forker Building is just up the hill to the west from LEED Recreation Building, also just to the south of our power plant here on the Iowa State campus. And there are two parking lots within the Forker Building area. We are in the northern parking lot, and then there is a little walkway with trees over it between the parking lots, and that's where we usually set up. We'll have a tent, we'll have some signs directing people to that parking lot, and you can't miss us when you see the tent. And so we will have registration starting at 9:30. We definitely encourage people to pre-register, which I can give information about that in a little while here. But you would can start coming at 9:30 to register. We will then supply you with all of the items that you need to have a successful event. So we will be having made available to you trash grabbers, gloves, bags. We'll have sunscreen. We'll have insect repellent. We even have wonderful support from Cookies, Etc., Fairway, Hy-Vee, Jimmy John's, in order to supply our volunteers with refreshments tomorrow to keep your energy levels up and keep you hydrated. And so then around 10 o'clock, we'll do a quick orientation about the event. We also have signage so people can look at the different areas where they can go clean up and the different things they can expect in those areas. And we'll do a group picture, and then we will send you off to an area where you would be interested in helping to clean up. And then it's according to your schedule, however much time that you can have available. We will have lunch served around 11:30 noon. And then what we have had in the past is that some volunteers have grabbed a bite to eat, and then they wanted to go back out again and do some more cleanup. Yeah. So we really try to make it very flexible. So even if you can't register at 9:30, we will have someone at our registration table from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. So even if it's something that you can come a little bit after lunchtime, you've got a busy morning, absolutely fine. Any amount of time makes a difference.
Picking up after ourselves, it's nice to have an organized event, but it also makes all the sense in the world to just get in the habit of trying to leave things better than what we find them. And this is really a great activity that you've coordinated. And is there anything else on College Creek? Because I'm going to segue into the Project Aware just here momentarily. But anything else about College Creek?
I would just let anyone that is interested in taking part, there's still time to register. And of course, as your day may get a little crazy tomorrow and you may say, gosh, we didn't think we had time, we do have a little time now. You can certainly stop by. But if you pre-register, that ensures we have enough supplies for everyone. But folks can find more information out about the event and also the registration link on the Live Green website. And that website address is livegreen.iastate.edu. On that front page, there's information, and you can click on a picture of the College Creek poster and find out more information, and also contact information for myself and this year's event coordinator, Elizabeth Smith, if you have any further questions at all.
And you have done some coordination on river cleanups in many regards all your professional career. I'd like to point out that we met as you were coordinating a river cleanup on the Maquoketa River, and it seemed like it was about 2003 and maybe 2002, but back in the day. And you have maintained this orientation towards organizing and empowering people to really make a difference. And cleaning up these waterways is pretty important to you, apparently.
It's very important, Pat, and I think that connecting to nature in any way and seeing how we can make a difference in protecting nature, ensuring nature and experiences in nature for generations that follow us, and just generally honor these great gifts that we have been given as we walk the planet every day is so very important. And events like this gives instantaneous gratification, right? So you pick up a piece of trash and it's not there anymore. And I think that is just so empowering and really inspires people. And I definitely think, in having talked to many volunteers on Project Aware and even College Creek, they will say, I never look at a piece of trash the same after I do something like this. Mm-hmm. And that gets to your point that every day we can be making a difference. A very astute and wonderful mentor once told me, imagine the difference we would make if every person picked up just one piece of trash every day. Mm-hmm. And I really tried to think a lot about that. But yes, Project Aware, a much bigger waterway than we're talking College Creek. But what an incredible event. And oh my goodness, the success and the growth and the impact that it has made. And it still continues. This year's event still has availability for people to sign up. And it's happening July 11th through 16th.
And that's going to be on the Raccoon River. I think it's going to initiate there at White Rock Conservancy is where it's going to start. And I believe I read where there were over 60 miles of the Raccoon River that they will devote in segments each day, July 11th and then until July 16th. Yeah.
Yeah. Starts on a Sunday, ends on a Friday. And I was just on the website this morning, and they now have registration, like a day-by-day registration, understanding that many people can't attend the full event. And the only days now that still have available spots left are those last 2 days, Thursday and Friday, which includes the Redfield to Earlham and Van Meter areas. So, but those days are still available, so that's the ending of the event. And definitely encourage if people are interested. That website is Iowa Project Aware, allonword.org. And they really have done a great job on this website, giving you a lot of good information on what to expect, how to prepare, on the impact of the event, and some great testimonials as well.
Yeah, and there's a lot of wildlife to be appreciated on these days. And I know sitting around the campfires, traditionally, they had evening talks, but there's generally people that are in the know and answering questions and following. I know there's quite a river otter story, for instance, there on the Raccoon River, where they were brought there in 1986 on the Middle Raccoon River. And that's always been kind of fun to share what it means to be in an area that has had river otters rejuvenated. Their absence of over 100 years. And it's just things like that that really make the whole cleanup and how the Project Aware, which is very coordinated with the Iowa Department of Natural Resources that you established, it would then convert a lot of the trash into art. And those pieces then have a story to tell. So I guess it's something to look forward to in July. I'll try to get Lynette Riley or some of the key people talking about this year's Project Aware, because I presume it was probably canceled last year, probably due to COVID constraints. So it's back. The College Creek cleanup is back. And these are just what a great way to strengthen not only our natural environment, but our community of like-minded individuals that want to make a difference. And go out and do it.
Yes, absolutely. I think that for a lot of folks, there is definitely the interest and the motivation to make a difference. Sometimes it's just connecting to the right information and the right opportunities to know how to make that difference. And there are so many really wonderful opportunities, I think, that our Ames community offers. My goodness, what a calendar of events we have to get involved, get informed. Not only environmentally for sustainability, but social sustainability as well. And of course, always economic sustainability on how we can ensure a healthy, economy and healthy livelihoods, for those that share our community with us. So it is, being able to give back, being able to find that connection. Oh my gosh, it's so gratifying. You can just, I don't know, if you go back to the Grinch stole Christmas, you can feel your heart grow, can't you, Pat, during those moments?
Yeah.
And, you know, to your point, what an incredible, powerful, historical sort of reflection. And really that those awe-inspiring moments of, particularly on Project Aware. And Pat, you had such an incredible hand in this and in offering those stories, you know, to the volunteers of, do you know who has walked the land here, you know, before you? Look around. Here is the evidence of all of the amazing, you know, life that exists with us, you know, in this area. And that is so incredibly powerful. And that sticks with folks. And certainly every time that, you know, I have the opportunity to go do an event, whether I've organized it or not, something strikes me, something is powerful for me. And I'm just that much better of a community person and a steward of our planet in having those connections.
Boy, and another topic that I want to bring up before we run out of time is the rummage rampage. What a great way to repurpose, reuse, restyle, just a great opportunity that's coming up. How about some details about the rummage rampage?
Oh, I'm happy to provide that, Pat. So this will be a rummage rampage was another event that we weren't able to do last year, but it is back this year. So this event is, folks are probably aware of it, but maybe for listeners, just to remind you, this is the event where we are looking at opportunities to take useful items that during the changing of leases and moving between apartments or maybe leaving Ames or coming to Ames, there are a number of things that people need to set up themselves in our community, and there are a number of things that people find they aren't able to use when they move out of their apartments that they aren't able to take with them. And so it's an opportunity to bring those two needs together and have basically the equivalent of a giant garage sale in the intermodal facility for the city of Ames. And of course, items are priced to sell, just like at a garage sale. The difference in a garage sale is that all of the proceeds are going to nonprofit organizations that volunteer their time during this event. And so this year's event is happening Friday, July 30th through Saturday, August 7th. And Friday will be a donations only day. So we ask everybody to start bringing in the donations. We get our sales floor. And now it's like a two level sales floor in the intermodal facility. We get our sales floor all set up and all ready to kick off shopping promptly at 8 a.m. on Saturday, July 31st. And then every day until the 7th, we offer and encourage people to bring in donations. And of course, the sales floor is always open. Finally, then on Saturday, August 7th, we don't offer any additional donations to be dropped off because that day we start off being half price. Then we go down to fill a box for a certain amount of money, fill a box for even less money, and try to ensure that we can find homes for as many of the items as possible. But it's a fabulous event. We depend on thousands of volunteer hours, and our volunteers make such an incredible difference to this process. Right now, I would mention we are in the midst of our volunteer nonprofit organizations. We've had about 28 organizations sign up of interest to take part in volunteering in this year's event and sharing in the proceeds. And so right now they are collecting the minimum number of volunteer hours in order to get on to the next stage. So we're excited to have those finalized. And then on June 21st, the link to volunteer opens up to the general public. Anyone can sign up at that point. And in signing up, then you designate where you would like your hours to support as far as a nonprofit organization. So a lot of great information on the City of Ames website. If our listeners go to cityofames.org and then just type in rummage rampage or just even rummage, if you type that in, you will go to the website, see information on the dates. If you're a nonprofit organization, learn about what that process is because we have those dates on as well. And then just information on how you as a community member can take part. You can volunteer, you can donate, and we need shoppers. If we don't have shoppers, we don't have those, those dollars to give to our volunteer organization.
And I think you mentioned some of our visitors that come to Ames, maybe just for the summer. you know, for summer school, summer activities. And when I see ads like this or you listen to promotions that you're sharing, it kind of makes you feel like that somebody cares. And we are so fortunate that you are coordinating these efforts like this where you get a like-minded theme going and people respond, people care. And then it really helps whether people have the time or at least they know it's occurring and that somebody cares.
I think that there's so many ways that our community, you know, puts forward that caring consideration, really. And you're exactly right. Having opportunities like this, and you're so very kind to, you know, offer me kind words, but it has been absolutely a team effort with so many community organizations, so many groups such as KHOI Radio that offers opportunity to market and increase awareness about different events that really bring it together. But I absolutely agree, Pat, from the standpoint of as I visit different communities and I see different events that they are having and see different programs they offer, gosh, you get such a great feeling about that community and visiting that community or being a part of that community if you're a new student or you have a new job, you know, in Ames. You feel really great about being a part of a community that cares.
And we care at KHOI, and we care about our fund drives, and having your voice really ensures that our sustainable members can keep relying on these type of reports, a sustainable membership or a friend membership of $250 annually. If you can budget in that regard, I almost guarantee that after a while you will realize that it's worth every penny that you are contributing. So a basic membership of $60, a family unit of support at $100. We take in all donations, large and small, this time of year. But really give it yourself assessment of just how much KHOI brings to the Ames community and offers voices like yours, Mary Rankin, with the Sustainability Director at Iowa State University and for the City of Ames.
Pat, it's always a pleasure to join you. And, you know, I would echo what you're saying in the fact that no act is insignificant. You know, every little bit that our community can provide to support those things that are important to us, whether through time, whether through financial donation or in-kind donation, makes a difference. It makes an impact. And it ensures a more sustainable future for those who are with us now and who will journey into the future.
And those that will follow. Yeah, we're trying to chart a course here. Well, thank you, Mary. Mary Rankin, Sustainability Director with the Iowa State University and the City of Ames. See you next month and have a great cleanup in the morning.
Thank you, Pat. Take care.
Local Talk airs at 7 a.m. and 5 p.m. on Fridays at 89.1 FM. And tell your friends far and wide, KHOI is streaming live at khoifm.org. And hit that play KHOI FM button. And please remember to support this station financially when you go to the website khoifm.org and find the yellow donate button. KHOI provides a platform for citizens and public officials to air opinions and information. The views of our guests do not necessarily reflect those of KHOI. KHOI is community, nonprofit, nonpartisan media. And thank you, Local Talk producers Ursula Runeberg and Lynn Carey. And thank you, Dennis Hart, for your Friday report. Thank you, engineer Mike Murphy. And thanks to our guests, Carolyn Raffensperger and Mary Rankin, for her monthly installment. This is Pat Schlarbaum. Our theme song, as always, is Backtracking by Tom Richards and Al Harris from their CD, The Ballad of Kate Shelley. And we heard Rain by The Beatles and Todd Rundgren. Stay tuned for Headline News and Democracy Now! Remember, you, the listener, are what makes KHOI meaningful and possible. Thank you for listening, and see you again on the radio.